This is Parsha Shlach. The pasuk that we're dealing with today is such a strange, strange pasuk. Everything that goes with it. I'm going to go through all the psukim that deal with the giants, that deal with these massive people that were living in Eretz Yisrael. And our question is going to be threefold. Our first question is, were they really giants? Is that what they're referred to in the Chumash itself? Were they really giants in the first place? The second thing that we're going to deal with is who exactly these giants were, where they came from, and what they are. And number three, why don't we have giants nowadays? I mean, we have like Shaq, but like, why don't we have like real giants that are like 150 billion feet tall, right? And that are able to crush everybody. Why don't we have those nowadays? What happened that they existed in the times of Chazal, right? I shouldn't even say times of Chazal. They existed in the times of Tanakh, and then all of a sudden they're gone. What happened exactly? Here's the pasuk. The pasuk that starts it off is in pasuk Lamed Beis, when the Meraglim are talking back to the people to say, "V'chol ha'am asher ra'inu b'socha anshei midos." All the people that we saw inside those cities, there were men of means. Midos is sort of like a trait, or people that had sizes. And seemingly it means huge sizes, that there were really, really big people. Then it says in Pasuk Lamed Gimel, V'shom re'inu as a nephilim. There, when we were in Eretz Yisrael, we saw the nephilim, whatever these nephilim were, b'nei anak, the sons of the giants, min ha'nephilim, from the nephilim. Which is also weird that it repeats the word Nephilim here. Vanihi beinenu kechagavim. We were, in our own eyes, like grasshoppers. V'chein hayinu beinenu. And that's what it was like in their eyes as well. We felt like grasshoppers, and seemingly we were grasshoppers in their eyes, so it's weird. So Rashi translates. We're going to start with anshei midos. What does it mean by anshei midos? Rashi says midos are people that are massive and tall. You have to measure them because you can't believe they're actually that big. That if you see a person out there who's like 8 feet tall, you go look at him, you're like, wow, that guy, there's no way that guy's actually, I have to see how tall he is. That's what it means by anshei midos, somebody that you would measure. The Ibn Ezra says that as well, pointing out how big these people actually were. And the Ramban says, since the land had all these huge fruits and all these grapes and everything, only giants could live there. And that's what the Meraglim were saying. This land is not made for us. It's made for them, made for giants. But it's not made for normal people. If we live there, something bad is going to happen. That's the line that they're using over here. In fact, the Chassam Sofer says, this may have been why they were so shocked when they saw the giants out. They saw tons of people dying in the streets. And normally when there's such a plague, everybody stays indoors and they close up their windows and their doors and they don't go anywhere near it. When they saw a plague where people were dying over and over, lots of people all over the land were dying, you'd expect everybody to stay in. But these guys were so self-assured, so strong, that they were willing to be out there even though there was a plague outside. They said, these guys are huge. They're absolutely huge. There must be something in the air. There's no way we're going to survive if we stay there for that long. That's what they assumed. And they're so big and strong, they're not scared of anything at all. That's what they assume. They assume that something crazy was happening over there. That's the idea behind it. The Ksav Yad Teiman. You don't know what that is? That's Yemenite Rashi. You never heard of Yemenite Rashi? This is the coolest Rashi out there. He says that there were people, these were people, not just anshei midos as in huge people. There were people who were learned in the art of war. There were warriors. These are people who were so good at what they did over here. They filled their houses with weapons and warfare and everything they had over there. It scared the living daylights out of here. And this is the word midos. Midos is not in size. Midos is in madov. Warrior's clothing, the stuff that you would wear if you were a warrior, that's the pshat, says the Ksav Yad Teiman. The Rechaim Peltiel says they were unbelievable merchants. They were good in business. They were Kananim who were good in business. And that's what these people did for a living. They were so good in their business. They were so good there, it's going to be impossible for us to displace them. They're men of Emes. You can't get rid of men of Emes. If they're men of Emes, that's going to last forever. But then Targum Yonason comes along. Targum Yonason says that these people were people with horrible character traits. Horrible character traits, that they walked in, they saw these giants, and they saw them as such rude, uncouth people, which you expect giants to be, especially if anybody's seen. I actually have not seen, but have read the BFG. So, never heard? Roald Dahl? Big Friendly Giants? Of course. Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. Is anybody here, have you never been seven? How do you not know what the BFG is? Either way, it's the greatest book of all time. And in that book, you see that all the giants, the massive giants, are uncouth. It's only the half giant who's somewhat normal. And somewhere around there, says Targum Yonason, they were horrible. It can't be that they were just bigger, says Targum Yonason. It can't be that. Because just bigger wouldn't say anshei midos. Anshei midos means they had midos, they had character traits that were not very good. And because of that, it was horrible. And they felt that it was the land that made them this horrible. It's true. you are what you eat and you are what you drink. In certain lands where they eat and drink certain things, they become in a certain way. That's based on a Medrash Tanchuma and Parshas Balak. So too over here. There were certain things that these people were eating and drinking, they thought, that made it horrible for them. On the other hand, says Olenu Shabbat, the Rabbi Yitzchak Zilberstein, look at our giants. Our giants, like the Chassam Sofer. Everybody knows the Chassam Sofer, right? Chassam Sofer. Chassam Sofer. You know what the Chassam Sofer writes in one of his tshuvas? He writes this down in his tshuvas in Or HaChaim. It's in Or HaChaim, the end of tshuva number 180. He answers the whole kasha. I'm not going to go into the kasha. He answers the whole kasha. At the end of the kasha, at the end of it, right at the end of the tshuva itself, he says, and you should know that I don't have my svarim on me to check up my answer. I'm doing this all by heart, but I don't have any svarim on me to check my answer, because all of my svarim are in the other room where my wife, who just gave birth, is sleeping, and I don't want to wake her up. The Chassam Sofer is writing this tshuva, sending it out, and saying, I'm not going into the room because my wife is in there. How could I possibly wake her up? He knew it would be a better tshuva. There'd be something better if he had his svarim on, if he was able to access his svarim and to be able to see and look up and write down whatever he could find in there. But he couldn't. He couldn't. That's an anshei midos. These are people that have actual midos. Midos that are exemplary. They are the people that are anshei midos of midos ros. We are the people, our giants, are people that have good midos that are right there. But the Kli Yakar says the exact opposite. They lied completely. They said that these giants were filled with good midos. They were great tzaddikim. How are we going to displace such great tzaddikim, says the Kli Yakar. There's no way we're going to be able to do it. He said their body structure, says the Kli Yakar, the Meraglim were saying, their body structure is so huge, there's no way we're going to be able to do anything over here. We're going to get sick when we come near, but they're not going to do it. The Chizkuni, the Ksava Kabbalah, says that these guys don't even overeat. They were watching them eat, they were watching them do everything, and they weren't even doing anything crazy. They're huge without overeating. It's one thing if you're huge because you overeat and that's why you're such a massive person. But if you're just a normal person, what are you supposed to do? I think, I don't remember who it is. There's a tight end in the NFL who somebody asked him, like he gained like a crazy amount of weight. And he went to, I think he said, like, I went to Chipotle's or like one of those restaurants every day for like a year. That was his diet. His diet was go to Chipotle's for a year, and he gained something like 80 pounds, which is not surprising. But he fit his frame. He was like 6'6", and he built himself up, right? And he went, to, obviously, he worked out together with it. But that's what he did in order to build himself up to get there. So it's not such a shocker when you see these huge giants because they eat like giants. They eat like massive things. But these were people who didn't eat like animals. These were people who ate normally, and nonetheless, look at them. Look at how big these giants are. They were shocked by what they looked like. That's the concept that they were saying to the people, that how are we going to be able to take them over? The Igret HaKala says, midos are the midos. You know, we don't have to go into this, but the Kabbalistic midos, you know, like what we say in Sfira, Chesed, Gvura, Tiferes, Netzachot, etc., all those, that's the concept he says over there. Okay, let's go into something else. What are the Nephilim? The reason why they're called Nephilim over here, based on a Pasuk in Iyuv, is because they were so tall, it looked like at any moment they were going to fall to the ground. The Das Sakanim says, you were always wondering about them. How tall is that guy? So therefore they called the Nephilim from the word Pella. Not from Nephal, but from the word Pella, as if they couldn't believe it. Or, again, it does mean Nephal, they were afraid that they were going to fall on top of you. That whenever you walked by one of these guys, you were afraid that he was going to step on you. Like one of those, you know, like a dinosaur movie. The Meraglim specifically mentioned the Nephilim, even though there probably were no Nephilim alive in Eretz Yisrael. But they said, oh, they're Nephilim. They're Nephilim out there. Because everybody knew what the Nephilim were. Everybody knew these huge giants that were there by the times of Bereishis that were known as the Nephilim. They all knew these people. So they said, the Nephilim are there, just to scare the people because it was a known name, something that scared them out of their mind. Yeah.
How tall are we talking?
If the Nephilim are what they're supposed to be, right, like Og size, then we're talking huge, absolutely huge. We'll talk about the physicality behind this later on, but how this works physics-wise, I should say, not physicality, but the physics-wise how this works. But we're talking 60, 70 feet in the air, maybe even more than that. Huge, huge creatures, beings. You can't call them human beings because no human being structurally can work that way. But a huge creature, like a massive, massive, like a juggernaut type of creature. That's what it would look like, right? And those are the people out there, and they saw them like this, sort of like a legend. The Shach says they never saw them at all. They saw signs that such Nephilim existed, but they never actually saw the Nephilim themselves. And that's what they said when they spoke to Moshe Rabbeinu. It's like they had no idea. There's no clue that there was something there. Rabbeinu Bachaya says there are actually three different types of giants over here. The Nephilim were the ones who were extremely huge and scary, right? That's number one. Those were the Nephilim, known as Bnei Elohim in Bereishis, almost like children of God in Bereishis, but I'd say like lowercase g type of God. Looking at them caused you to tremble. That's how scary they were. That was the top level. Then there were the Anakim, which included Ephron. Everybody remember Ephron from Avram's fame? You know, selling the land over to Avram? Ephron was the king Anak. He was the father of Sheshai, Achimon, and Talmai in this week's Parsha. That's Ephron. He was the Anak, the ultimate giant. That's the person over here. He was a secondary size. The Nephilim, the Bnei Elohim, and then comes the Anakim. The Malbim says the opposite. Anakim are bigger than the Nephilim. But it tells, according to this Rabbeinu Bechaya, we have a Rishon over here that says it like that. And then there were the Rephaim. The Rephaim were like Og and Sichon, who were weaker. The word Rapha is a little bit weaker. They're a lower level. So really, Og and Sichon were the smallest of all these giants. Then came the Anakim. Then came the Nephilim of the Bnei Elohim. And that's how the Meraglim were saying. That's what was in Eretz Yisrael.
Predate them?
So, questionable. If Og is the same Og as from the Mabul, Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer, the Radal, Rabbi David Luria on the side, seems to say there's two Ogs. If it's the same Og and he lived for 700 years, then yes, he predated them all. He was a shrimp of all the giants that lived before the Mabul. He was the smallest of them all. That's what it would be over there. But if it's not, if it's another person, then it works a little bit better. What's up? Brachos, right. In the Gemara Brachos, right, a Nun Dalid Oma Beis, that's where it mentions that Moshe Rabbeinu was 10 amos tall, that he jumped 10 amos, and he had a spear that's 10 amos and hit him in the ankle, which would make, again, if 30 amos reaches the ankle of Og, and the ankle is 1/18th, let's say basically 1/18th of your body, then do it quickly. 18 times 30. What's 18 times 30 altogether? 540 amos. And an amma is a foot and a half. We won't even go chazonish on you. We'll just do a foot and a half over here. That means that Og was 800 feet tall. That's what you're dealing with. 800 feet tall. Which to us, yeah, it's very, very difficult. That's difficult to understand. In simple explanation, if we wanted to use the Marsha on that, on what it means to be 10 amos tall, that you're fully shalem and you're complete and you're able to hit the ankle, that Og really had a schus that had to do with ankle, maybe there's a different idea over here. But if we're dealing with people that are 800 feet tall, we're dealing with things that are impossible, because no way Og is 800 feet tall and he's the smallest out of all the giants. That we're dealing with people that cannot live on our planet. It's impossible. How do you deal with that on our planet? Now, I'm not denying anything. If at the end of 120, right, I go up to Shemaim or Mashiach comes and he's just like, here's Og. And Og is like this huge, like, huge tower that's 800 feet tall. I'm not going to be like, you don't exist. Like, that I'm not going to do. I'm going to be like, all right, I tried. I had absolutely no idea. I'm not going to say that. I just, when you're dealing with these things, usually these midrashim are there for a reason. It's trying to tell you something. Typically speaking, it's because the size that's being used here is not meant to be taken literally. Not always, sometimes it is literal. Usually it's not always, it's not to be taken literally over here. Now we have an unbelievable medrash. Rasha brings down that the Nephilim were the children of Shamchazai and Azoel. What does that mean? They were the fallen angels. Now, I'm going to skip out on most of the Christian midrashim that people have over here. There are actual Christian midrashim about Shamchazai and Azoel and how they fell from the from whatever it is. And in Dante's Inferno, he talks about them quite a bit, what these fallen angels were. They feel like Satan was one of the fallen angels. I'm not getting into all the Christian midrashim. Those are garbage and whatever. We know. It was just made up. We're dealing with actual midrashim. There is a medrash that deals with what happened with Shamchazai and Azoel. And here's the deal. It's based on a pasuk in Tehillim, Ma Enosh Kisiz Karenu. Then the days of, literally, Enosh, the grandson of Adam Rishon, there's Adam, Shais, Enosh, that during that time, Enosh, the people were starting to worship Avodah Zarah. During that time, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to punish the people, so what he did was he flooded a third of the world. It was not the Mabul yet. This was a different flood. It's called the Mabul of Dor Enosh. It was something completely different. The Malachim were upset, and they said to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, these people are garbage. You don't need them in the world. If you would allow us to be the ikker behind the world, they said. The Malachim said, if you would allow us to be the ikker of the world, everything would go well. And Hashem said, it's not the people, it's the land. The physicality of the land causes them to sin. The gashmias that they're on caused them to do things that are wrong. So it's not them. If you would go down there, you would be just as bad. Shamchazai and Azoel turned to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and I should tell, it's a timeout, by the way. Shamchazai is also known as Aza. There are other places where you'll see the name as Aza. Shamchazai and Azoel turned to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and they said, if you send us, we're not going to fail. We'll go down and we'll be fine. Hashem said, you're going to be worse than all of them, but I'm going to do it. Sent down Shamchaz and Zol, they fell from the heavens. That's the Nephilim. Fell from the heavens. They came down. They were these huge giants. And they sinned with all the women. They stole from all the people. They gave fear upon all the people that had seen them. That was Shamchaz and Zol. They were punished. Eventually, they were allowed to survive the Mabul. How they survived the Mabul is another Machlokas Midrashim. And then they became banished. After the Mabul was over and the table was gone, they were banished behind the Hari Choshech, the mountains of darkness. Bilam learned all of his magics from Shamchaz and Azoel. That's where he had learned everything from Shamchaz and Azoel, from the other side of the mountains of darkness. That's where they had ended up learning it from. It's an unbelievable little line over here, but that's the Nephilim itself. The Ayala Sashachar goes into this, he asks a bunch of questions on it, regardless. Rechaim Kanievsky brings out, and he says, let's say those are the Nephilim. Why does the Pusik say the word Nephilim twice? Again, the way we worded it was, the Shomri'inu is a Nephilim. There we saw the Nephilim. In this place, Nephilim is spelled with two Yuds. Nephilim, Pei Yud, Lamed Yud Mem. And then it says, B'nei Anak Mina Nephilim, the children of the giant from the Nephilim. And in this Nephilim, it's spelled without a Yud between the Pei and the Lamed. It's spelled Nun Pei Lamed Yud Mem. It's missing a Yud. Why do you mention the word Nephilim twice? And what does it mean that the second one doesn't have that Yud? What does that refer to exactly? Rechaim Kanievsky says that it could be that they never saw these giants. Now, the same way we had said it above, they never actually saw the giants. They saw signs of them. They knew that there was somebody around, but they saw a daughter of the giants. The only medrash, there's two, I should say. One of them is where Talmai picked up the Meraglim, saw that he had scared them to death, and that they had died, and he picked them all up in his hand, and blew life into them, and gave them Tchias HaMesim, and said, don't worry, we know you're supposed to take over the land of Eretz Yisrael, we're going to leave when it's time for us to leave. That's one medrash. But there's another medrash that says that they never saw actual giants. What they saw was the following. There was a girl who was eating a pomegranate in the field of her father, and they saw that when she peeled off the pomegranate peel, we all know you eat the insides, you don't eat the outsides. If you have been, you got to stop it, right? And she took the pomegranate peel and she threw it on the ground. All of the Meraglim thought it was a cave, and they went into it in order to hide in that cave. And later on, she came back. She said, oh, my father's going to kill me if I leave the pomegranate peel over here. She came back to pick up the pomegranate peel, and she picked up all the 12 Meraglim on the peel. And that was just the daughter of the Nephilim. They saw the Bnei Anak, the children of the Anak, Mina Nephilim, from the original Nephilim all the way through. Says Rav Chaim Kanievsky, the reason why Nephilim the first time is with the Yud is that they're actual Nephilim. They said that they saw the actual giants, but in the end, they really didn't see that. They saw the Bnei Anak Min HaNephilim. There's a Yud missing because she wasn't even really that big. As big as she was, it wasn't as big as it should be over there. The Tana de Belio, he gives another answer over there, but there's an unbelievable Rav Yonasan Eibshitz. Rav Yonasan Eibshitz says, there were people back then who had the ability to communicate with Hashem like Bilam. And there were even non-Jews who had that ability. It was more common then than obviously than now, but even in the times of Tanakh, it was rare to find a Navi like that. A Navi that could be, and there were people who had this connection. They just felt like they could always dive into Hashem or ask Hashem for something. There were people that were just like that. Their visions appeared to them when they were nofel v'glui einayim. As Bilam said, when he fell down in his face with wide open eyes, he was able to see these visions of Hashem. Sometimes there were other people who were only able to see these visions when they were Nephilim. They fell on the ground, they were never Gilo Einan. They weren't able to open their eyes, it was so strong. So to speak, it's as if they did Tachnun on the ground, falling in their face on the ground, and they saw these visions. The Nephilim were people who were able to see visions of God while falling on their faces to the ground. So, not giants. They weren't giants, but spiritual giants, says Rav Yonasan Eibshitz. Spiritual giants that has ability to be able to pull up magic or pull up this type of kedusha that none of us have. That's the concept of the Nephilim war. And again, according to this pshat, the reason why the Meraglim said there are Nephilim there is because, again, they're so spiritually great. How are we going to be able to defeat these nations? What are we going to be able to do over here? Okay. There's a weird Rashi over here. And it's really strange. The wording in the pasuk is, right, once again, Venehi be'einenu kichagavim. We were in our own eyes like grasshoppers. V'chein hayinu be'einayim. And so too were we in their eyes. We were like grasshoppers in our own eyes, and so too were we in their eyes. Says Rashi, the giants said to one another, and the Meraglim overheard them saying, there are ants, nemoim, in the vineyard that look like people. So what's the problem? Grasshoppers are not ants. They said, we were like grasshoppers. And Rashi says, we overheard them saying, there are ants in our vineyard. Well, then the pasuk should have said, Vani be'einenu kinemoim, not kichagavim. They should have said kinemoim. Or Rashi should have said, we heard them over saying to one another, we felt like we see grasshoppers in our yard. What's the pshat that Rashi switches from chagavim, grasshoppers, to nemoim, to ants? Okay, you hear the question? It's a famous kasha on Rashi. Everybody asks that question. The Chizkuni answers, what do you think the easiest answer in the world is? What do you think? Answer the same. That's actually a good answer, but that's not this answer. This is an easier answer to that. What's the easiest answer you'd answer? What? Even easier than that. Even easier. No, the easiest answer that you'll always see. No. This is a pure Gemara answer. It's sort of like a Tosfos. No, it's Lav Davka. Lav Davka. Rashi didn't mean ants. He meant grasshoppers. That's the actual Chizkuni. The Chizkuni says he meant small creatures. That's it. That's the answer. The answer is Lav Davka. That's what he says, and that's that. The Gur Aryeh says something very similar as well. But Mizrahi says it was a mistake. It was a mistake in Rashi. The word was not Nimolim. The word was Chanamolim. Chanamolim with a ches before the word Nimolim. Chanamolim is a type of grasshopper. Chanamal is a type of locust, really. I shouldn't say grasshopper. It's a type of locust. So Rashi said, Chanamolim yesh bekerem. There are grasshopper locusts in the vineyard. So it's the same thing. That's the arba, the grasshoppers that they mention up above. This is the same thing over here. The problem is, why would Rashi switch the wording? According to that Mizrahi, the pasuk says kichagavim. So in Rashi, he should have said chagavim. Instead, he switched over to chanamolim. Even if it's same, it's a locust and a grasshopper, and they're similar. Why would you do such a thing? What's the point behind that? The Marai seems to say, as you just said, Shmuel, that the grasshoppers, the ants of Eretz Yisrael, were the size of grasshoppers everywhere else. Is a grasshopper like that big? So all the ants were that big. Freaky little ants. It's not something you want to see. What? Yeah, Rashi's teaching you a lesson right here. Grasshoppers at the set. No, but the point was is that we felt like grasshoppers because we've only seen grasshoppers that big. But they were so used to ants being that big, so they said we were like ants. Now, I lived in Eretz Yisrael for 8 years. There are massive flies that I can tell you. If you remember horse flies in Eretz Yisrael, they're the size of human beings. They're absolutely... Like when you're on a bus and you see a fly next to you, you're just like, that's normal. That's 100% normal, right? It's there. They are huge. Oh my gosh, I don't really want to think about them anymore because they disgust me. So that's definitely true. But the ants, I don't know if the ants are that much bigger. So you'd have to say that back then the ants were that much bigger. That's the Marai's answer. But that's one answer over here. The Uriel Shlomo, the Marshal, and the Be'er Basadeh both say the targum of the word locust used in this pasuk is the word kamtza. Kamtza. Like kamtza bar kamtza? Like that name? What were you going to say, Mike?
If your whole answer was that ants were the size of locusts, yeah, or grasshoppers, but the giants would only say the ants that look like humans if the ants were the size of people, not if they were the size of grasshoppers.
So that's a good call. Hold on for a second there, right? Because even the ants wouldn't have been the size of human beings. They would have been the size of grasshoppers, right? Yeah. So how would they have been that way? That's a good call in and of itself. We're going to get to an answer that goes into that, but that's that. But the word arbe, chagavim in the pasuk is translated as kamtza. Okay, it says kamtza. The word kamtza is used in Sota daf lamed hay to refer to flying termites. Flying termites, flying ants, right? That's what it basically referred to. And Rashi does the exact same thing in Yevamis Kuf Chaf Aleph. He mentions kamtza, and he says in Rashi, he calls it nemoim. So it could be that chagavim, translated as kamtza, is the same word that Rashi holds is nemoim. So even though normally you translate chagav, you go to any Israeli and you ask them, maze chagovim, right? They'll tell you grasshopper, right? They're going to say that. So you can say back to them, lo, ant. That's what it is. It's really referring to an ant. And that's what it is. Because a kamtza, really, according to Rashi, is an ant. So this chagav is that. You know what's even cooler? If you look back in Parshas Shmini, when it mentions the Shmona Shratzim, one of the Shmona Shratzim is chagavim. Targum there translates chagav as chagva. Which means here, it's a different type of chagav. We're not talking about a grasshopper. We're talking about an ant. because the targum used for this word is not the same targum as used for over there. Therefore, it's actually referring to an ant over there. And I'll give you a raya. In Brachos, with that Gemara with Og. Does anybody remember what happened with Og? It wasn't just that Moshe Rabbeinu went up and hit him on the ankle, right? It wasn't like Achilles, you know, the famous story of Achilles and that's how he died, whatever it was. That's not how Og died. How did Og die?
He fell.
But what fell with him? He had a mountain. He had a mountain over his head that was three parses long, right? And what happened?
It fell on his face.
How did it fall on his head? How did it fall?
It was hollow.
The Gemara says that there were kamtza, there were kamatzim, whatever you want to call these things, that bit through the rock and caused it to fall down on top of his head. Then Moshe Rabbeinu took advantage of a crazy situation and hit him in the ankle, right? And he fell down with a mountain on his head. That... It helps you a little bit more, right? Because when your head is crushed by a mountain, right? And the Gemara even says that his teeth stuck out into the mountain so that he couldn't take off the mountain, right? What kind of grasshoppers bite through rock? What kind? We're obviously talking about something crazy over here. I know, you can answer the same question. What kind of ant bites through rocks? I don't know. Crazy big ants that are the size of human beings where the giant looks down at them, sees these crazy huge ants, some type of crazy termite that bites through the rock to be able to let it fall down. And therefore, what is this chagav over here? We were in their eyes like crazy huge ants that bite through rocks that kills Og. That's what we were. That's the way to be able to answer the question. But the Balaturim kills everything. He kills everything. That was a really good word. I like that a lot. I like that a lot. But he says the word v'chein hayinu be'nehem does not mean and so we were in their eyes. You know what v'chein stands for? Vav chaf nun ukimo nemoen hayinu be'nehem. We felt like we were grasshoppers in their eyes. Grasshoppers are bigger than ants. We felt like we were at least grasshoppers. But in actuality, we were only like ants in their eyes. We were even smaller than we felt we were. Now that's an unbelievable line. You always look at yourself as being bigger than you actually are. You think you have better ideas than anybody else. They thought to themselves, they actually were ants. That's what they looked like in the eyes of the giants. And they actually heard the giants say it. And nonetheless, they said, but we felt that we were grasshoppers. We might have been ants in their eyes, but I felt at least like a grasshopper. Why that's a mila, I have no idea. But at least it's a little bit bigger. That's the idea behind it, says the Balaturim. And the Chasam Sofer says something over here, the Malbim as well, and over here. But let's get into something else. The Vilna Gaon as well. Let's ask, is this really true? Were the giants so huge that they looked down? I want you to think for a second. Look down to the ground and think of a grasshopper right now. How big do you have to be for a human being that's 6 feet tall to be a grasshopper? How big does that have to be? That is huge. Remember we said about Og that Og was 700 feet tall? That's how tall you have to be. Were these giants 700 feet tall? So the Kedushas Levi says, the whole thing is a mushel. The whole thing is a mushel. He takes it all, he makes a Hasidish, a twist on it. He turns it all entirely around. He says something entirely different. What is an ant? What do we know about ants, guys? What do we know about ants? Pick up food over their head. That's not what I would have chosen. But that is true. Yeah, they're extremely strong, but industrious. I want the word industrious. They are hard workers. They don't stop working. They're going and doing everything they need to do. And there's no king telling it where to go or what to do. No king, right? No king. There's no king. There's a queen. There's a queen. But ants do not have a king telling them what to do and where to go and whatever, anything like that. They choose their own paths, they go out and they do it, and they come back and they're always running. You always see ants running. Always. No matter what's going on at any point, an ant is always running. There's never like that ant. Once in a while, he stands up there because he feels like there's a person who's huge standing and looking at him. She's just like, what do I do now? But aside from that, ants are always running. They're always going somewhere. Says the Kedushas Levi. It shows what they said about the Meraglim. The Meraglim are running around, said the giants, like chickens with their heads cut off. They have no purpose. They have no king. They have no direction. They're just running around. They're industrious. They're working really hard, running through the land in 40 days. But they have no purpose, nothing. No tafkid, no tachlis. There's nothing they're gaining from what they're doing. This is a problem, they said. This is a problem. The Meraglim should have realized what they were seeing with their own eyes. The fact that the giants were seeing them as ants, should have showed them that they were industrious without a purpose. That was the concept of what they were getting at and what they should have realized when they saw it. Another answer from the Kedushas Levi, ants do not steal from another ant in their same tribe, I don't know, colony. It's a bug thing. So either way, so ants don't steal from ants in their same colony. Why not? Because they know that it's all together as one. The concept is the Meraglim. The Meraglim use this as their excuse to the Jews. They said, you want to take over a land and be thieves of the land of Eretz Canaan? Take it away from the Canaanim? Do you want to act that way? We should be like ants, they said. We are like ants in their eyes. And we should look at ourselves as the Kedushas Levi and say, we don't want to take anything away from other people. Let's get our own land that will be separate from everybody else. That's what they said. And obviously the answer is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, go do it, then you go do it. It's the first Rashi in Chumash. Everybody knows that, right? No?
No.
Okay, that's bad. Amar Reb Yitzchak. Right, and everybody says, oh, it's Rashi's father. It's not Rashi's father, it's Reb Yitzchak. Reb Yitzchak the Amora. Amar Reb Yitzchak. Why did the Torah start off with Bereishis instead of the mitzvah of Achodesh HaZelachem? The answer is because we need to go through all these because the non-Jews of the world will come up to us and say, you stole our land. And we're trying to prove to them we did not steal anything from you. Hashem made the land and Hashem can give it to whoever he wants. The Meraglim's line is, let's be better than that. Okay. The Balaturim, okay, I mentioned something like this. I'm gonna go through. The Chafetz Chaim says an awesome line, and it's so true. The Sfasama says it as well. Such a great line in Musar. Pshat is, and he says it in the bottom right over here, on the bottom of page 3, says, who knows how they felt about you? How can you say that? Vani beinenu kechagavim, I forgive you for. That's how the Chafetz Chaim puts it. We were, in our own eyes, we felt like grasshoppers. Says the Kadosh Baruch Hu, I get that. Sometimes you feel like a lowly human being. Sometimes you feel like you're not able to do anything correct. I get that. You know, sometimes you're not in a great mood. V'chena yinu beineyam, this is what we look like in their eyes? How do you know? How do you know that? How do you know that's what you felt like in their eyes? Because they said something? How do you know that's true? You have to have self-confidence, even though on the inside, you have to be an unav and know I'm not as great as I think I am. You have to project that you're at least strong, have bitachon, have some sort of emunah. Says the Chafetz Chaim from this Medrash, he says, I don't forgive you for assuming that you know what was actually going on in their heads. You think that they thought of you as ants? Chas v'shalom. They thought of you as malachim. They were scared out of their minds of you. They were scared out of their minds of you. They didn't want to go anywhere near you. You should have realized that. You didn't realize that? I don't forgive you for that, says the Chafetz Chaim. And the Sfas Emes and Likutim says the exact same thing. Because we said we were grasshoppers in our eyes, therefore, we were grasshoppers in their eyes. When you go in with super confidence, uber confidence, and you say, here's what I can do, here's what I am, then that confidence oozes out and it projects to the other person who you really are. Not to brag, not to go in with an ego, but to go in showing who you think you are. I said this story, I'm telling you, it is affecting me so much. I'm listening to it all. Ramosha Feinstein. You couldn't find a bigger un-of than Ramosha Feinstein. Ramosha Feinstein was once outside of the Aguda convention. There was a guy davening right in front of the door, and they were all waiting for Ramosha to go in, and he said, I can't go, there's a wall in front of me. He didn't want to walk in front of a random Jew who's davening in front of the doors, right, a silly place to daven, right? He wouldn't walk in front of him. That's Ramosha Feinstein. Sitting in a meeting of the Moetzes Gedolei HaTorah, sitting with the Moetzes, and everybody's sitting around. They had a very sensitive topic that needed an answer. Some of the Rabbanim held one way, some of the Rabbanim held the other way. They were arguing about which was the best way to go, and Ramosha claps on the table, totally uncharacteristic of him, claps on the table, looks at everybody and says, Rabosai, Rav Aaron Cutler, when he passed away, put me in charge and said, I'm in charge of the Moetzes. Says Ramosha, I decide we're doing this. And everybody has to fall in line. Totally against the character of Ramosha, but sometimes you have to be that guy. And when you exude that confidence, you are that confident person. People will see you that way. It's your own fault, says the Kadosh Baruch Hu to the Meraglim, says the Sfas Emes. You appeared that way? That's why it was. That's why it was. We have so much to do over here. I'm sorry that I went a little slow. There's an amazing Chassam Sof over here about what they were scared of whenever in the Shach as well. But in Alein HaLishabach, Rav Zilberstein says he was once approached by a Jew who was not religious, and he was bombarded with questions. Why do you people, referring to Haredim, feel that you run this country? You guys are the minority here. How do you feel that? Why do you feel that you should do everything? Why is everything revolving around you? I don't get it. So Rav Zilberstein invited him over for a cup of tea. He said, get him to come inside your house. You can't argue with somebody in the street. You can't you can't deal with anger that way. So he invited him over to his house. He invited him over to his house, gave him a cup of tea. And after he did, right, he sat down and he said to him, he's like, do you know Tanakh? And he said, yes. He said, do you believe that Tanakh was given by a Kadosh Baruch Hu? He's an Israeli. So he said, yeah, of course. Right? How could you not? So he said, okay, in Tanakh, there's something that happened in Melachim Beis. Now, I'm sorry, guys, because again, your seminary careers were horrible, and none of you have any idea that there is a Melachim Beis, let alone actual psukim inside it. But in Melachim Beis, there is a story of Elisha, where Elisha is dealing with something. The king of Aram is going to fight Bnei Yisrael, and Elisha advises the king at that time, I think it was Yoash. He goes up to the king and says, this is what you got to do. And he got him away from all the ambushes of the Aramian, of Aram. So the king of Aram is incredulous. He says, there's got to be a spy here. Who's telling Elisha all of my secrets? Who's telling him everything that I'm doing over here? I can't understand how this is happening. And they said, there's no spy. It's Elisha. Elisha's a Navi. He gets everything. So the king of Aram said, get me Elisha. Send in troops, get me Elisha. And all these troops come in to go gather Elisha. These huge amounts of troops are all going to grab Elisha to bring him over to the king of Aram. Okay? Scary. The servant of Elisha, it wasn't Gehazi. Gehazi was already a Metzora, he was already out, whatever. The servant of Elisha at that time, who was unnamed in Tanakh, he turns to his Rebbe, and he's scared. He says, Rebbe, what are we going to do? The troops are there. So Elisha said to him, we have more on our side than they have on their side. And then he opened up the eyes of his student, whatever that means, and the student saw that there were fiery chariots and horses all around the mountains, surrounding Aram. And Elisha said, when you can see like me, you don't have to be worried about anything. Which shows you, number one, Elisha's a boss. The boss of all bosses. There's like nobody greater than Elisha. He's the greatest of all greats. Okay, that's number one. Okay, but number two, said Rav Yisrael Zilberstein to this person, said every time a Jew does a mitzvah, he creates a malach. If the Haredim are doing all of these mitzvahs and adding on by doing mitzvah after mitzvah after mitzvah, that means they're creating thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions, billions of malachim. We're not the minority. You just can't see our majority. That's why everything revolves around us. Because our majority is impossible to see if you don't open up your eyes to what we have. I have no idea what happened. It's a great answer and a chop of an answer. But I have absolutely no idea. I don't know if the guy was like, no, and he drank his tea and then I have no idea. I would love to say that that man became his father-in-law, Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein's father-in-law, Rav Elyashiv. I'd love to say that. But that's probably not the answer. Probably not the answer, right? I'd also love to say, that man was me. That would be great, but I'm not Israeli and it's not like that. Either way, our last question, which we're not going to be able to get into so much today, did these giants really exist? How did it happen? You just know, by the way, a person who's 6 feet tall needs a heart about the size of this to be able to pump the blood through his entire system. The taller you are, the bigger problems you have. You all know from the NBA, all the tall players have massive, massive issues with their feet. You know why they have massive issues? Plantar fasciitis or all the other issues of not enough blood flow. Because when you're 7 feet tall, getting your heart to pump the blood to your extremities, the ends of your fingers and the ends of your toes, is nearly impossible. Your heart is not strong enough to do it. The taller you are, the more your heart needs to move, and the heart does not expand exponentially. If you wanted to double a heart, which is cubed, you'd really need 8 hearts. That's what you'd need to double. So a 12-foot person would need 8 hearts. That's how big his heart would have to be. And that means that that's not a normal human being. If you have 8 hearts, that means your lungs have to be bigger, your kidneys have to be bigger, your gallbladder has to be bigger, everything else in your body has to be bigger. You would have to be 8 times the size that you are today. So if a 6-foot person is at perfect BMI, let's say 175 pounds, I'm just saying, right? But if you have that 6-foot, 175 pound person, right? If you had a guy who's 12 feet tall, you'd need a guy who weighs nearly 1,300 pounds in order for it to work, in order for his body to work. You want to go to 24 feet? You need to multiply that by 8. That's what you'd have to do. You have to multiply almost 1,200 by 8. You'd have to be a couple tons in order to work. That's what I mean. You cannot be. The reason why Shaq works the way he does is because the man is literally a tank. He's not built normally. I'm not surprised if after they do an autopsy on him, he has a heart of a giraffe. That wouldn't even surprise me. He could fit a giraffe inside him. So when you're that huge, but a guy like Yao Ming can't make it. A guy like Sean Bradley, he blows away like the wind, right? They don't work. The tallest person that we know of to have ever lived was a guy by the name of, anybody know? Robert Wadlow, who was 8 born in Illinois, I'm just saying, shout out. 8 foot 11 inches. He died at the age of, anybody know? 22. Because what happened? He stepped on something, an infection went on his went into his foot, and he didn't have enough blood flow to be able to take care of it. It's like the craziest thing in the world. So granted, that was like, I don't know, 1920 when doctors pretty much said like, yeah, that didn't work. I don't know what happened. But it might be different now. But nonetheless, it's crazy to be able to stay this way. So what is it? So let me just say very quickly. Tiferes and Reuven Shem Shab Eibshit says, there's a hint from Chazal in the word anakim. Rashi says it means manikin acham and begovasin. He says, this could mean there were people back then who knew what they were doing in the realm of Kishuf and could bring down the koach of the sun and its hashpah, and from there be able to give birth to strong men and warriors, people of giant stature. That doesn't happen anymore because no one knows how to use Kishuf. Did giants exist? They could, says Rabbi Yonasan, if you know magic. And I don't mean like Chris Angel magic or whoever those guys are. I mean like real magic. If you know that, that's a way for giants to exist. But we don't. And that's why they don't exist anymore. Could they have existed? Yeah, in some magical realm way, yes, there could. We don't have them for that reason. There's so much more to talk about, but we'll stop with this, guys. Have a great Shabbos.